Sometimes we listen to podcasts at dinner. I waited to the other room after it was still playing. When it gets to the end of a podcast, they'll, you know, you may never have idle time. They just automatically bring on the next one. Right. So the next one was, because I subscribed to Pages and Panels, was Pages and Panels, but it was one of the ones that we were on. And there was like, there was this droning noise that I kept hearing. And I was like, what is that? And I got in the room and I was like, oh, that's me. It was like, I ran around the room screaming, turn it off.
That's horrible. Yeah.
Does that ever happen to you?
That hasn't, but I have had the Pages and Panels account YouTube suggested to me for like upcoming videos, like on my next thing. I was like, I don't want to fucking watch that. All right. I can close about the 50 windows I have open. Oh man. And finally, so after it was canceled from Target, and then I ordered it from both Amazon and Barnes & Noble to see which would come first, but it finally came after like
right on. Oh, so I see it's still in plastic. You haven't cracked it yet.
No, it just came today. It's I'm not rushing to read it. I will read it.
Oh no, it's great. In fact, maybe we want to do that for another like we did.
Yeah, that might be a good. I mean, it's a pretty chunky.
I already have the reading done, so that makes. It's you have to do the heavy lifting. You know what? My apartment looks like. I was thinking, I gotta get a background or something. I was looking when you go to the YouTube page. It has like it pulls out, the header image for the YouTube video.
Yeah, I gotta fix that.
And in all of them, my head. I look like one of those floating heads, like in the year 2020. Now we're there. Yeah, it just looks like it's in this black space and my head is just weirdly ghastly. Like, this apartment is great. Love it, but we don't have an overhead light. So the lighting situation.
So that's all, that's all I have. We only have overhead light. And like, it makes, because I'd been using that, the Goodreads, and they have the like function where you can scan the barcodes.
Uh-huh.
Like mm-hmm. upload what you've read, and it like almost never. It's always like your lighting sucks. We can't figure out this. But
I will say,
a buddy this week.
Oh. podcast crossover with the Slate Culture podcast, Julia Turner. Editor for the LA Times loves MODOK, or her kid's doing. She's adopted her love for him.
Yeah,
man. That is great looking. Does he float?
He's got like a.
There you go. Yeah, a little blast off. They like to do that.
Yeah, he's got. Have you seen?
Did you watch the cartoon?
Oh, the new one, is it out now? I didn't watch it yet. If it is,
Oh, see, you get the two faces right on.
Yeah.
I
saw the the fight scene they like teased or whatever put out. That looked pretty good.
Patton Oswalt talks about it, but a lot of this stuff, because like we're in this new world where there's 50 different streaming sources, so you never know if you're missing something. So I cannot ever tell if something's out.
Yeah, I don't know I assume it's going to be on. I assume it's going to be Disney Plus. I would have to think, right?
Yeah, because they're doing all the Marvel stuff, right? Although who knows where he belongs.
Yeah, I always feel like I look at it and I'm like, that looks like a Hulu show, but.
Before we get too deep, I want to shout out one of our biggest Stan accounts, Ed Pisker, the comic KFAP guys. I don't know if they covered the Gumby Summer Fun special, which was I think our first greatest comic book of all time.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So hey Ed, give us a call sometime. Let's do a crossover. Like old, we're big fans too. Not really.
Old news, yeah, man.
Yeah, you're late to the party.
Although I still haven't. Yeah, I still got to read the other one because there's two, right?
Yeah, there's there might be, I think there's other Gumby stuff down the road, but those are the two, Arthur Adams ones. The winter one is good in a different way. I think we should, around Christmas, we'll do it for Christmas up.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't really care about the Art Adams ones, but.
Yeah.
But other than that, yeah, I don't think there's, I always like, I should do some research into like comic news to start off, but I don't think there's any, I don't generally care. I saw the Sweet Tooth.
Yeah, what'd you think of that?
Look fine. I don't know. I've never actually finished Sweet Tooth. That's so I don't know if I should. I might have to do that. I'm trying to get through, like, I don't know, I started Death Note like 2 days ago or something.
Like, so you had never.
I don't. So I know, and I say this knowing 100% that it's not what it is, but I just always felt like it was like too edgelord for me.
Right.
I know it wasn't, but I feel like it was adopted by like Hot Topic-y stuff. So I was like, I don't know.
The fans ruined another thing.
Yeah. So I had never read it, but I've gotten like, I think we talked last time, I've been like huge into manga of late. I mean, I've always been into manga, but I've been like on a manga buying spree this past like month. So I downloaded the Shonen Jump app. Try out some stuff. It's like $2.99 a month and you get everything Shonen Jump has ever put out, so it's pretty like a good deal. So it was on there and it's like I don't think I'm ever gonna buy it, so I was like I'll try it because I went through some other series first, but I'm like I think I'm probably in the paperback versions, like if you were to that, I'm probably like 5 volumes in or something.
Oh wow. Yeah.
And I can't decide if I like it. I am just past where the second Kira shows up.
Okay. Okay. All right. I can't decide if you like it or not.
Yeah, it's weird. So that probably means I like it, but like I am like at times incredibly interested, and then at times I'm incredibly bored. Like, like. I mean, part of it is, and I get it. Like, Light is not it's not supposed to be likable.
Yeah.
And I don't find L incredibly likable either. So, like, I'm just like watching these two really smart guys go back and forth, and like the like turns of keys and like puzzle box type mystery stuff is like really interesting.
Yeah.
But it's like, so I'm just like, oh my God, I'm so bored. And then like there's the part where he's like, he goes out, he like comes up to Light and tells him he's L, and I was like, oh, that's cool. And then but I'm just like,
I know that was a big development.
Yeah. I'm back to like 5 pages of them talking and I'm like, oh God. But I like it. And the art is really good. And I know for like Shonen Jump, like at the time that was like something like groundbreaking. They don't necessarily do like mystery realistic art, so I appreciate it. I'll see it to the end, but
it gets hard going later. I think that thing that you're, I agree, I am a little softer on L. I think like you have one character who's a drag and then the other one is interesting, but then that sort of that I won't spoil. But what you're saying is absolutely right. The structure is great, but like this, the plot structure is great, but there are no characters that you're really like your entry, your window in, they're just not there.
Which, yeah. And like, I get that that's, you know, that's the point. I think to an extent, like, I don't think you're supposed to like Light at all. I don't know. I mean, I don't know, but
I think he's like a Sherlock. It's a Sherlock Moriarty where, you know, they're both super, you know, like I also, maybe Light isn't so smart. Like,
yeah. Well, and it also feels like when you're reading it, cause they'll be like, Light will set up this mousetrap and then L like will fall into it. But then that was part of L's mousetrap.
Yeah.
Light's like, actually, you falling out. So I'm like, okay, all right. So I mean, I'm on board, but I don't know. It's interesting, especially again, something that is so kind of like in the culture that I'm finally getting to it. But it's all right. Yeah. So I don't remember what we were talking about to get to that.
That's it.
Sweet Tooth. Sweet Tooth, yes.
Oh.
That was...
Can I say I love Jeff Lemire? I don't know how to say Lemire. I apologize if I'm butchering your name, Mr. Lemire.
Is he Canadian, right?
He is, yeah. He'll be the first to tell you. I loved the Essex County stuff. I got them in real time, like the ground floor on the first one. And I have a great, like it's one of the hockey, like pinup, like not pinups, what do you call them? Paper dolls. Like you can put different. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like a long time Lemire fan. So like no tea, no shade on this, but I did not like Sweet Tooth. And I'll like, this is my thing I say all the time. Like, does the premise work if it doesn't? Like, there was a Muppets, Peter Jackson. I might have this. It's either Peter Jackson or the other guy. Might not be Peter Jackson. Hold on. Did a like, what if the Muppets were dirty? And I think they were the Furbles.
Oh yeah, meet the Feebles.
Feebles. There you go.
Yeah, that's Peter Jackson. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So it's not great. I don't love it. Not to attack any of its. You know, if you're one of the people to do, but it's like, does the premise work if it isn't puppets? You know, like, does the script work if it's just straight? And I think, like, if you apply that to every genre, and I think Sweet Tooth is a, like, if you take out the, like, does this plot work without the fact that they're, like, goat people? Or, you know, like, in the, and I feel like there's something, like, I just, there's something always missing, and I was in for a bit and then bailed. And it was, I think people were crazy about it. I just did not. I was like, this is a great creator, does great work. But I don't see what the, like, this is the wrong thing to get hyped over.
Yeah, I think I read maybe the first two volumes.
Yeah.
And it was like one of those things where I was like, oh, I see where this is going. Like, I'll get there eventually, maybe. But yeah, stuff like, you know, Essex County or trying to find it. He has those like two, well, he has a couple, but. There's the diver one, which might be called the diver. And then the one with the
Mr. Like, Nobody.
Yeah. And there's one where there's like he's either like an older brother with a sister or I can't remember. But they're all like, they look like, you know, hardcover paperback like novels. Shit. I don't know what it's called. I don't know. But those are good. Like those, like his slice of life stuff is really good. And
yeah.
Obviously, like Animal Man and all that stuff. Yeah, Sweet Tooth was just, it was like one of those ones. It's like why I think we talked before, why I never finished Walking Dead. I got like, you know, a couple volumes in and was like, I think I got what I needed to get out of this. Like, I'm good. Like, we'll see. But
so we are doing this live on YouTube. So we say this every time. Feel free to chat. We've got the chat thing up, so chat in and we will ignore it as we always do.
Yeah, ignore it or forget multiple times. and so we're talking about books that, you know, they are not the greatest comic books of all time that we read this week, because we read two books that were, well, I read a book. I don't speak about your book. I don't know. What do we want to do first?
I think one is lighter, or not lighter. One's heavier, so maybe the heavier one later.
Yeah, although I feel like both. We do this a lot. Like, we do. We pick books that we're qualified in a sense to talk about them as how they're presented to us and how we perceive them as comics and stories. But I feel like both of these are like two books where you're like, oh, two white guys are talking about two ostensibly female-driven books. But they're both fantastic, so I guess that works.
Yes. Yeah. No, I think two greatest comic books of all time that I read this week. Two for two. So the first one just came out, like, hot off the presses. You could, like, if you are lucky, it hasn't sold out at your comic shop, and you can go grab it. And that is 20 Fists. It is from Source Point Press. Written by Frankie White. Art by Kate Bauman. Standard disclaimer that we always put, I don't always know how to pronounce the names. If you get it wrong, send angry letters, but we'll try to get it right the next time. Colors by Gab Contreras and lettering by DC Hopkins. I think this was kickstarted. I believe this was kickstarted last year. I got a chance to see it a little ahead because of that. And so I knew that this was coming down the pipe, and I loved it. And I could not wait for us to be able to talk about it. It's 25th is sort of like I would say like a Romeo and Juliet, big asterisk by that, kind of come Fight Club. We meet our pair of star-crossed lovers who belong to rival gangs, who belong to a kind of like loosely connected fight association. There aren't a lot of rules, but the rules seem to be each crew can only have 5 people. Nobody gets to kill anybody in the other crew. And when they see each other, they rumble. So the two ladies that we meet, Billy and, I'm all so bad with the names.
What is it?
Chell. So I guess in Chelsea, Billy and Chelsea, the story is set in, we started in the middle, and then the second half of the story goes back. There's one of 3 issues, so it'll carry on a little bit longer. So we sort of meet the characters a month later and then go back and see like, when events started. Billy is part of the Big Jacket Gang, so named because they all have cool haircuts. and then Chell is part of a gang that I don't think has a name, and frequently gets called No Names. They clearly have an attraction, and it looks like when we start in the middle, they have unfinished business. They all meet at a bar. It looks like the book, or I shouldn't say looks. I can tell the book is set in Chicago. The bar they meet in is a little divey, maybe an actual joint in Chicago. I'm not sure. There's tension. We meet a few of the characters. We meet some of the guys, I say guys advisedly here. The gender dynamics, and one of the great things about this book is the gender dynamics are interesting. And I was left kind of not fully 100% certain of what the gender situation is on every character. One of the things that's really cool is that although these are people who belong to these sort of fight groups, they're not like, these just aren't macho bruisers. These are like, frequently the boys are skinny and a little fey, and then the girls are a range. It's not just like big, you know, gorgeous ladies of wrestling women. It's also like Billy, as we'll see, is very, very femme, at least in the way that she presents. So the coding, the gender coding in the book is fascinating. I'm still not 100% sure. I think one of the characters, I'm not totally certain. And that uncertainty runs throughout the book, not just as far as like gender identity, but also like, I don't think all the characters are named. A thing that I like that Frankie does here is he assumes that you will catch up. Like for one thing, the characters speak in a kind of a lingo. I don't know if you saw Mank, but I found Mank highly irritating, like highly stylized way that they would speak. It's fun for writers, I think, to sort of like sit and rattle off, but it's not necessarily fun to read. I've never watched Gilmore Girls. I hear some people sort of level that as a criticism of that show. What happens here, I think the language is stylized. They speak in sort of like a coded way that friendships and small groups of people do. You're never sort of like, you're always able to contextually understand what people are saying, even if you don't get the specific. Frankie understands his audience is like clever and will figure it out and will catch up. And that is sort of like I think the mark of a confident writer, and not just in sort of like, he doesn't feel the need to sit and like carefully identify every character by like, you know, having somebody say their name to them. He doesn't need to sort of like draw everything in high relief so that you get it. He just assumes that you're going to follow along. When you sort of like, after the first big fight, you finally get the rules. It isn't sort of like posted at the very top of the issue. Like he just trusts that you're going to follow along. I love the writing in this book. A lot of times people say What he does is very nuanced. It's slight. It's slightly minimal. He's not like, it's not over decorated. He's not spending a lot of time. Like, people aren't soliloquizing in long ways. He gives small moments that seem very sincere and genuine and recognizable. Like, you've had moments like those yourself, and he sort of trusts you to recognize those. But I've talked for a bit. Kyle, what did you think?
I mean, I pretty much, no, I fully agree, I think, with everything you were saying. I think honing in the first issue, because that's kind of what we're looking at, it's right up my alley in the sense, like you said, I love being dropped into a world, especially a world like this. Like we said, there's no real kind of outline as to what this is. Like, it feels weird in the sense that there's clearly this, you know, these rules established where there's these, either if you want to call them gangs or clubs or groups with five people, and they fight, and it's like, you can't tell if it's a fight club scenario type thing, or if it's like a turf type thing, or just like whatever it is. But also, like, you're dropped in, like you said, these characters who are fully realized within their groups and their relationships. And the way I think Frankie approaches the writing, leaving a lot of the development, I think, to Kat and Gabe, you were like instantly pick up on the vibe of the characters. And like you said, whether I think you fully understand either the gender fluidity or the relationships in the book, I think you pick up instantly what their roles and personality are. And it's all because, like, it feels so like lived in and real. And that's what I enjoyed most about it. There's, if you are watching on YouTube or revisit, there's a scene early on where she goes outside to smoke, and she gives like that, there's like this kind of like tongue look to her friends. And like, I think like you were instantly like brought into this group with that. So, and I think that's what's key to making a book like this work, because I think the fighting element is almost secondary and works well because of the characters. I feel like otherwise it would just be, I don't want to say redundant, but like that wouldn't be so interesting if it wasn't set up that way. Like, when you get to the final kind of rumble in the bar in this first issue, it's so much more fun because it's built up with the characters versus kind of building up the fight as the fight. But I was looking to see how it like went off based on the characters. And I think throughout the series in this issue, I think like the characters are like so well lived in that, like, I was so interested to see what each of them did again within this, like, I don't know how to describe it. It's very weird how this like dynamic works. Maybe it's because like I'm like so anti-aggressive, where I was like, the idea of being in a group where you fight people, I'm like, oh boy, okay guys, like, oh, that sounds dangerous. But that's why I read comics, because I can watch other people do it, and it's much more fun that way.
I think you said two things. You said better, you nailed it better than I did. One is vibe. I think this book is like just, it rides on vibes. And that's not laziness or there's no criticism in that. It's just sort of like things are getting transmitted like telepathically, which is really good. And then lived in, these feel so lived in. The characters feel so lived in, the world feels lived in. It feels particular and specific, which is always great. Like they're not just, you know, they meet in a bar and they're hanging out in a bar. It doesn't feel like generic bar background. It feels like a specific bar. It feels like, you know, like the places they go feel very specific. I mean, I guess you can go back and sort of like check and see if, like, you know, the trinket shop on the boardwalk is real. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. It doesn't matter, because it feels real. And that's just a great trick to pull off. Also, like, there's a thing that's going on in here that I love. It is sort of like my favorite part of my beloved Doro Hidoro. You have these rival gangs. Who knows if, like, there are probably multiple gangs. I'm sure there's, like, you know, lots of crews out there. They feel like disaffected young people who are just sort of, like, filled with anger and hostility. And this sort of fight culture is how they get it out. these, again, like, just to sort of hit this home, these aren't punks, you know, these aren't like, you know, like, they're not dressed up in militia gear, and they're not like, you know, they're not bruisers or hard, you know, like, one character looks like Shaggy. A lot of them look very, like, you know, look very outsider, and not the kind of people you think of as sort of, like, which is a cool, like things are always more fun when it's sort of a friction of something unexpected. But the two rival gangs, I love, like, so it's five each. I love all 10 of them. Dorohedoro does this really great. You kind of are rooting for and care for the characters who live in sort of the, you know, magician overspill gutter. And then you also kind of like the magician crew when you meet them. Even the sort of like the big bad is like, he's a charmer. All the characters are charming, and you love spending time with them. And it's tense then when they sort of meet and have to sort of come into conflict, especially because they're all also very good at what they do. And you know that, like, there are going to be casualties. So, like, initially we're sort of like introduced to Chell and her crew. So because they're the people we sort of enter with, we're sympathetic to them, and sort of like, those are our people. And when we meet the big jackets, you know, like, we're, oh fuck, I hate those big jackets. But then later you spend time in the flashback, you spend more time with the big jackets, and like, they're fucking rad. I love them all. I don't know where the story is going. And it is, as with all Romeo and Juliet stories, I hope not towards tragedy. But I hope that we get to, like, I hope we get to understand their world and why they like, I guess my wish would be that in addition to sort of this way that they exorcise their, you know, anger and hostility, like, do they also have parties? Do they have mixtures where they just all go and dance and have fun? I don't know. We'll find out. In the flashback, Billy and Chell share a moment together on the Ferris wheel. By the way, a lot of great characters in this. None as awesome as Ferris Wheeler, who I will leave you to go look. He's the mascot for the Ferris.
I was like waiting for.
And O'Connor is locked and loaded.
It's like, we're going to talk about Ferris Wheeler?
Yeah. I don't know if you guys.
Trust that motherfucker.
If this gets out to the creators, the creative crew, side project, we could have a whole 4-issue Ferris Wheeler. Sign me up.
Listen, are we set? I mean, all jokes aside, obviously he's fucking cool. Are we supposed to not trust? Like, I don't trust this guy. I like him. I don't trust him. Like, this shot is so ominous, and I don't think it's supposed to be. But I'm like, oh boy.
The shot Kyle is describing, Chell and Billy are taking a ride on the Ferris wheel. Ferris Wheeler stares up moodily. We can't see the expression because he's wearing a giant foam Ferris wheel.
But the way, because I mean, I talked about it. Obviously, again, kind of the development of the characters is great. I love the pacing of this first issue, setting up that fight, which I think pacing that fight out is really awesome. And then it cuts to the past, and pacing that kind of interaction is equally as tense and exciting. But I think all of that works, like, to another level because of Kat and Gabe. The art, like we talked about, I think so much is sold by these characters. And I say that all because you get the lovable Ferris Wheeler, and then when you get the shot of him, like, he's colored in shadow. Like, again, I don't trust him. I don't know. I have a feeling it's just a red herring, but
You know what? We do not see his face. And whenever you have a masked character in Act 1, true. Expect a reveal in Act 3. So at the in the romantic moment on the Ferris wheel, Billy and Chell share sweet words, and Billy gives Chell a charm. Going back to the beginning of the issue, which is later in time, a month later, Chell is still wearing the charm. So we think whatever's going on between them, obviously the emotion is still there. We don't quite know why they've fallen out, if they have. I'm not sure. But I'm sure that will be unearthed, or maybe not, because I think like Frankie likes to leave some like blank spaces for you to fill in on your own, and maybe we don't have to actually know.
Three issues,
yeah.
And I think it's really fun about the first issue too is that, so it kind of leaves it on the, I think, the Ferris wheel, right?
Yeah.
So like, even kind of, there's a lot of obviously kind of threads, but also like, I feel like kind of where the, like maybe the tone or kind of the direction the series can go is like, there's a lot of options. So I'm excited to see kind of, cause like, again, the Fight Club aspect or whatever it is in that sense. Cause that, I think in the flashback, they refer to TERFs. Like that aspect is really interesting, but then obviously again, kind of the Romeo Juliet aspect is interesting. So like what, how that either intertwines or what kind of more direct avenue they approach they take with both, I think will be interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I'm fully on board and can't wait to see the rest of it. I'm going to ding a few points here, and this does not go to the creative team, but I want to say like, I think the book is not served well by this cover. Source Point puts out a lot of great books, and I think they're like, as a publisher, they're sort of like growing and diversifying. But I would say that like, you know, a lot of the creators, this is sort of like, you know, they're sort of entering the game. I think this is, but just sort of putting the last names and kind of leaving it a little blank. Like it felt a little vague and a little generic. And I think the you know, like, I think a lot of these, I think Vault is killing it. Scout is doing a great job, but a lot of these publishers are sort of like making a very specific, I hate to use word brand identity for themselves. And they're sort of like helping to use that as the imprimatur. Like when you're looking, like, I don't know about you, my comic book shop, like the indie wall is like, you know, like 50 to 100 comics long. And so when you're scanning, you want to sort of like, want to have like little helpers that sort of help you like, oh, I like this stuff. You know, like I've enjoyed all the books I've read from Vault. So, you know, this is another Vault book. So I think like, I think Sourcebook could like, I think you could hire a designer and you could step up your game there. And you could like, also like with these new people who are talents, like to really watch for, like help let people be aware of who they are. Just a little 2 cents, but otherwise like, 4.9 stars out of 5, not 10. Totally loved it and cannot wait for more.
Yeah, I think the only other point I would ding was, why did that bartender wait so long? Like, and it was like, by the time you finished that, buddy, your bar was destroyed.
But the bar was a little confusing because, like, as you're watching the background, a lot of the attendees, what do you call it? They're just patrons, not attendees.
Yeah.
Not a concert.
Like, everyone's there to fight, I think, right?
No, they. I mean, when the fight breaks out, it's bar wide. But it, you know, the early part of the evening, you see people patting each other on the back, and you hear little snippets of conversations. I really like. I love the writing style of this. I feel like you weave in and out. You feel like you're in a real place. There are little moments that, like, one of my favorite moments. I don't know the character's name. I'm not sure if they've even revealed it. But the guy who dresses like Shaggy, he's sort of like mad at Chell for her sort of forbidden love. He goes to like have a moment alone and knock back some painkillers. There's this great shot where he's just like swallowing a handful of like undisclosed pills and saying like, boy, she really needs to get her shit together. And that sort of like juxtaposition that sort of like paints a moment. I like that kind of stuff is great. I love it and I'm totally here for it. And like you said, I think these are personal beats, or not personal beats, but they're not like plot, you know, it's all moving towards a, like, it's not all this big machination that you're watching roll forward like a Marvel movie. This is like, you know, little character moments and little pieces of people's lives. And I totally, totally, totally loved it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think everything works on it. It's impressive for, like, I don't know. It's not like a first comic, but like it's, I think, impressive for a first issue with how engaging these characters are, which again, I think is one of the hardest things to do in a first issue. It's really, especially a large cast of characters. I think they do it extremely well.
Oh yeah, yeah, totally. Big lot, really, yeah.
They really sell Ferris Wheeler. So,
yeah. Ferris Wheeler Mini, the fans demand it. So that was the greatest comic book of all time that I read this week, Kyle Overkill. What about you?
Yeah, I read I think I even teased it last time. I had been planning on Ultra Mega. It's an Ultra Mega, right?
Yeah.
Because I loved that. I think it's one of the greatest first issues ever read, and second issue was great. And it was a recent comic that had come out, and I and then I realized, like, again, we can do whatever we want. So I think maybe 2 weeks ago or something, I was in the bookstore and I saw this book, and it had been on my radar when it came out. And for whatever reason, I try and like keep a list of books I want to buy, but for whatever reason, I missed that. And that was my book of the week, which was The Man Who Came Down the Attic Stairs by Celine Loop. I threw that in Google to text speech, and I think that's how you say it. I couldn't find an interview or a video where she says it, but I believe it's Celine Loop. It is a graphic novel. It's fairly short. I think it's like, looking at, I think
it's under 50. 40,
yeah, it's 48 pages. So it came out September of 2019. I think originally she had published it prior, but it was published through, I never know if I say this right, Archaea Press, which I believe now is an imprint of Boom. But I love Archaea. I think we've talked before. I think they put out some of book-wise. Obviously, quality, I think, is always great, but I think like their physical books are always fantastic. It's a little oversized, really nice paper. What is it when the stuff stands
spot
out?
Varnish.
Spot varnish on the cover. It's fantastic. But yeah, so I was like in the shop and I saw it and was like, oh fuck, I never bought that book. So I bought it, read it. And I was like, I feel like this is like a book for us to talk about. Maybe not, because like the subject matter is, I don't know if we're qualified to talk about it, but I think in terms of like I think Ultra Mega would have been like my safe pick. Maybe not safe, because I do think it's I think we will talk about it, but
yeah, I think it's
for kind of right. Like when we kind of venture out into the other comics that we like, I think The Man That Came Down the Attic Stairs is one of those. Very much in line with one of the previous picks, I think. I'm blanking on it.
Lolo Woods?
Yeah, the Lolo Woods. Yeah. I'm a big, huge fan of horror, especially kind of horror set with atmosphere. And this is a story about a woman named Emma. When we first meet her in it, she is pregnant. And she is moving into a new home with her husband. I think his name's Thomas.
Thomas.
And you're like instantly that first page. Like the first thing that stands out is Celine's art is beautiful. Every page in this is like gorgeous. It's black and white with kind of like gray shading. A lot of like brush strokes for the background, almost like water. You would know better than I as the artist, watercolor-esque in the background, but I don't know what you would term that as, but anyway, you meet her and she's put in this home, and that's what you kind of find out. It's like you see this home in the beginning and it's this beautiful like mansion, and as the story kind of continues, I love the aspect that this now this becomes like a cage, in the sense where I don't think it took me like on the third reading to realize like how kind of set back the place is. Like she's kind of on her own, and so it sets this really great atmosphere of this book that feels like a kind of psychological horror book. And as you're reading it, I think the brilliant thing, I think why it's so amazing is, I think, especially as I think a male reader or anyone kind of first approaching this book, the way Celine sets this book out is you are trying to find out what is going on with Emma, and also kind of like as the title says, there's her husband at one point goes into this attic of this home and comes down and he seems different, and she's starting to see things. She has her daughter I'm blanking on the name of the daughter.
Rosen?
Yeah.
Hold on, I'll pull it up.
But as she has this kid, it is just colicky, but more so, and she can't sleep, and so he's crying, and everything is getting kind of worse, and she feels just you kind of sense the almost kind of frustration and depression and just helplessness, and she's getting no help from her husband or anyone in her life because she's kind of secluded, but she's still kind of supposed to take care of the house, the kid, and her husband seems like almost like an alien, like he's disinterested, kind of unhelpful, but only kind of interested in his own aspects of this life. So again, I think the brilliant thing is, like, as you're reading this, you're kind of trying to figure out what is going on. And I think when you get to the end, I don't know if it was like, because it is so short, I don't know, but like, I don't know, I think I feel like we have to at some point because of the context of the story. You get to that reveal and it's like, oh shit. But then when you go back and read the book, I think you get a better understanding of the actual horror of the story. So that's my long rant, you know.
A couple things. First, right off the top, and not to be we haven't done one of these where I think since last year we haven't done a greatest comic of all time where you do a pick and I do a pick, and we were on our Secret Invasion and then we did Invincible. And I just like I always love your picks. I love your taste as a comic reader. Like, whatever you find these things that are sort of like a little off the beaten path for me. I'm always sort of like curious at first, and then like the minute I like engage with it, I'm like, oh, I love this, is great. I love this. I love the art. I just want to echo a couple things you said. First of all, Arkea. I love Arkea. I think that is a great publisher. Also, Mark, I think Smalley, I think he's the editor. Like, this is a great guy. Also, in the sort of field of young, I don't know if it's young adult. Like, a lot of their books are geared towards kids. And they do a bang up job. Like, I just think that they're like a top notch, and sort of like in a space in between comics and like children's books. So this book, like you're saying, is a beautiful artifact. Like, it's just, it's a beautiful put together. It's a beautiful and elegant piece. And the art matches, like, lives up to that. Like, when you open a book sort of like nicely designed, you expect to be consistent throughout, and it is. I feels European. I don't know the backstory, if she might have been a European creator or not.
I don't believe she is. I believe she may be, or I don't know, I can't speak to if she is, but I believe she studied in America.
Oh, okay. But the animation is, I mean, I'm sorry, the art style is, I thought, very Japanese. Like, this felt very manga-ish to me. Like, not directly, but I don't think that she sort of like, okay. Perhaps she is
I don't want to fuck up. She is from France. She studied at the Maryland Institute College of Arts and then has returned to France. So that, yeah, that tracks.
Okay. the story as we read it, I didn't notice at first, and there were a couple pieces of it that are, we can talk about this later, whether it's playing with that, but I think it's set, and we're, the props, the environment, and a lot of the details lead us to think this is sort of like a post-war story. And I think that ties in thematically, because the husband and father is like, as a character, he's a little aloof. I think he's even drawn in a very sort of like, of course, you know, our narrator and her child are drawn very emotionally, expressively. But for the most part, Thomas is kind of a bit of a cipher. He's also absent in a way that like would be a little dated today. I think dads are expected to be a little more involved. And there's a nice exchange between her and a doctor she starts speaking to later. Where, you know, like, she is just expected to always get up and feed the kid. And then is sort of nervous that like they're making too much noise and it's going to bother Thomas. And like, the doctor's like, he never checks in. but I think putting it in a, making it a period piece does a couple of things. First of all, you get these sort of beautiful retro, like the cars are retro and there's like rotary phones and things like that. So everything has a sort of like a beautiful retro look to it. Also the men's and women's roles are a little more dated. At the beginning, we meet a young woman we instantly like. She's pregnant. And then we see sort of like the mansion she's about to move into. And although she's excited to live there, we can see that that is a haunted house from the get-go. So we don't like, oh, no, I don't know if this is going to go away. I think it's moving down. So I think it's self-consciously moving down like certain avenues that we, you know, like, are you going, is this character possibly going crazy? Is this character, you know, like, I think we've seen some stories before about, you know, like, I think the Yellow Wallpaper is the famous one, but, you know, about women's conditions being categorized as hysteria and the sort of, like, patriarchal silencing of women that kind of goes around that. The thing that I think is, like, so vividly good here is, like, this is a very, you know, like, very specific, like, postpartum tale. To sort of address what you were saying at the top, like, I don't have children, you have children, we're both, you know, we're both white men. Like, this is, we are not the most qualified people to give a nuanced conversation about postpartum. But I would push back against that only to say, like, I think that what the creator is hoping is that she can convey that feeling, even if it's something you've never experienced. I think if you read at the end, she does a little afterword where she sort of says that when she wrote this, she hadn't actually had, or I don't know if she has children now. She was considering getting a family. And I think the tension of having a family is like very evident in the storytelling. But she hadn't actually, does not have a child at the point at which she's creating the story, whether she does now or not, I don't know. So it's also something she hasn't directly experienced, although has probably a better understanding of than us men. But I feel like I get it. She does such a great job. And I think that this is not just storytelling. I mean, it's not just in the written word. Like you can see in this panel here, like every scene where the kid is screaming in these sort of huge, large, expressive letters that like that intrude into the scene, dominate it, and like it's all you can hear. And even though like it is
very claustrophobic.
Oh my god, yeah. Also, there is not a scene with the kid that the kid is not screaming. Like there's never a moment like the character never gets a moment's peace. User reader never get a moment's peace. Like it's such a great impact. Like I feel like you hear it in your head even though you're reading something silently. Like this poor lady has this kid that just will not stop screaming. Everyone just is unhappy, is miserable. And then, you know, she can't sleep and, you know, she's a beautiful woman at the start of the story and she is just unraveling throughout the course of it. No matter what she does, like feeding the baby doesn't help, put the baby down doesn't help. She starts to sort of like just lose it. And you really, 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 really. So like, because we've seen these stories before, we kind of have certain expectations about what's going to happen. And I think like for a little bit, like, you know, like because these stories are often, you know, like, the patriarchy or the men who won't listen or the doctor who won't listen or the man who's telling her, you know, like, you're hysterical. Like we know to train our eyes on the doctor that she's talking to and her husband. And she does a great job of sort of playing those two characters, you know, as like they're ambiguous, but you could very easily read it as like, what the fuck's wrong with this guy? And then when it starts to take on more, as she becomes more, as she starts to lose perspective more, then it starts to take on possibly supernatural elements. She starts seeing things and not knowing if she's, you know, and the great subversion of this story is that you think you're going down a certain path about like, oh, these men are terrible forces, but she does, like she flips that script in this sort of amazing and beautiful way that is unexpected, surprising and chilling. And like you were saying, like, I don't know if we should discuss spoilers because it's like, I think it's the kind of thing you want to push people to if they haven't heard of it and you don't want to like let the cat out of the bag. I don't know. We'll feel it out. But yeah. And it's not like this is like a sixth sense, you know, there's a big reveal. It's just, you know, the story unwinds and it just zigs when you're expecting it to zag.
Yeah, and I think that like I it feels like a reveal at the end, but I think that's what the brilliance of it is, that it is only kind of a layers the nuance. Kind of like this feels very much kind of like Lola Woods and similar books we've talked about, in the sense where, again, I think the brilliance of this book and specifically horror, and I think she references like Shirley Jackson kind of as an influence, and I think why female creators or even people of color. Earlier this year, I read the Only Good Indians.
Oh yeah, that's great.
Why I think those books for one work is because as either a woman or a person of color, something like that, you can kind of infuse your daily horror almost a lot of times into a story, but the brilliance, or I think the relatability of horror, is that then you can do so in a either subtle or a more nuanced way to a reader, that they can then interpret it more. Like, I think if you were to have a conversation of postpartum depression with somebody, like, there's obviously kind of a level of understanding or empathy that could be had around that, but by filtering it through horror and filtering it through kind of this oppressive art, like, you, whether or not you have ever or could ever feel that, I think you are able to then kind of internalize it more. And I think that we saw that with Lola Woods, where, again, as someone who generally as a male has all the agency in his life, really, I don't necessarily have that problem that is in Lola Woods. I can understand it by the story, and I can at least try to empathize, and I can feel the horror because of the horror elements. So I think she does that. Like, I think that's where this story is amazing. And so I guess this isn't direct spoilers, but what's so brilliant, I think, about this book is early on, you feel, or at least it's presented, that Emma is an unreliable narrator. Mm. And I think the big, why this is so amazing, is that you come to find out that, maybe she isn't, or maybe, I don't know. I don't know if that's spoiler, but like, I the reading, the true horror of the book is the rereading of what is actually going on. And again, like you said, setting it in this time is deliberate, because of, I think, that tackling the ideas of what postpartum depression is and was perceived, and the way, like, what are they called, oncologists, or like, women doctors, again, that's how well versed I am. Those were all, at this time, they were all men, they weren't even women. And like, so like, again, I think the kind of horror where she's so secluded in this story, she lives in her house by herself with her husband and their kid. The only people she sees are the doctor, who is another man. And I think you kind of get like the feeling that he knows either the husband, or he's aware of the husband. And you get really no one else in the story except for the kind of the one altercation outside of it. So like, again, it's just throughout the story, you're just kind of sitting with her. And so she's able to kind of establish that overwhelming nature. And as someone with kids, again, I don't understand the actual feeling of postpartum depression, because obviously, like, pregnancy is so fucking weird, because like, it physically alters your chemistry. Like, people get what is, like, prenatal, people can develop diabetes just while they're pregnant and it goes away. Like, it's, this shit's so fucking weird. But I do know, like, as like the oppressiveness of kids, like, the crying, the not getting sleep, the like constant worrying, especially if it's like your first child, like in this story, like, it just breaks you down. And to have the added aspect of the postpartum depression, and kind of filling that in is crazy. I've mentioned on the show before, and like, it's horrible to say, is like, after having kids, I totally understand how people like shake their babies to death. Like, it's like, you're just like, why won't you stop crying? I am talking to you. What the fuck is going on? And it's just like, I get it. And it's like, you see that in this. And I think she does a great job of kind of really presenting that aspect of the story.
I 100% agree. I think I mentioned I don't have children. I had a coworker a coworker a few jobs back who a lady who was not actively trying to get pregnant with her husband, but found herself pregnant. And when the baby came along, had an issue that she thought was colic. Like, she just thought, like, very much like the story, like, just crying all the time. And it turns out, like, I think he had like an acid reflux. Like, whenever he was laying down, like, bile would go in, and it was, you know, painful for him, and he'd cry. She didn't understand this, and everybody kept telling her, "Let the babies cry." And like, I saw her, like, day by day coming in. We worked in, you know, like, a cubicle apart. I just saw her start to, like, and also, like, I think the conversations you have, like, you know, when you return from maternity leave, which is never very generous, you know, there's a lot of, like, excitement and happiness and I mean, directed at you. I don't think any moms are very excited to be back at work. But, like, very shortly, like, you know, like, people, "Oh, how's the baby?" She goes, "You know, baby's fine." A couple things, like, we were talking about postpartum depression, and it's a big part of the story. I think there's a sleight of hand that goes on, where I think that this is, like, much like Hereditary, I think this is a story, like, a moody story about a kind of haunting. And it's presented in a way that is sort of ambiguous, and you can, I mean, Hereditary at the end makes a decision, but let's just say it's like the first hour and a half of Hereditary, where you're presented with a lot of ambiguous things, and you have to sort of parse them yourself. And I think that, like, the story is in one way of looking at it, is it is the telling the story of a haunting, and postpartum depression is sort of like the like one of the tools for understanding what the main character is going through. Because it, in addition to that, or not in addition, compounded with that, I think, you know, she starts to feel, we see her presented, you know, like, starting to get very confused about her feelings for her child. Like she's, you know, during scenes of care that are very difficult because of the conditions of, that she's under, she's describing feelings of, like, there's this sort of love that I'm supposed to be experiencing that I'm not a mother. Maybe some people are not supposed to be mothers. That is a line that my coworker had said after they got the diagnosis with her child, and she sort of better understood, I think, like, things improved in her, for her. But I think, like, I think that is such a, like, I think that is such a fucking tender time. And you're under all these sort of physical constraints where you're not getting enough sleep, and you're not, you know, like you said, your body just went through this very dynamic change. And it's sort of like a pressure cooker. And then also, I think, like all people, you know, like, I think we all have this sort of sense that, like, in some way we're not up to any task, or, you know, like, if we're charged with taking care of something, it's doomed. You know, like I think, like, the normal, not normal, but the very human things that all humans feel about, you know, fears of fearing how competent we are for tasks, especially one that's very, like, important as, like, raising a child feels. And, like, all of that is sort of like it's like the tornado this poor character is in. And that's like, it's like, so I guess I would say this isn't like, nothing about this is meant to feel, I don't think anyone is supposed to feel on the outside of it. I don't think as a male reader, you're supposed to approach it and think, like, "Oh, I'm not going to get this because I have not had these, you know, these feelings." And that's just not, like, you're not, these are all tools to sort of, like, I think, get to a very, you know, the kind of story that, you know, like a haunting.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times what we talk about, or books we've hit on, is, I think what makes really great comics or any story, much like kind of Hereditary, is you can read this book and you can read it from start to finish and you can get out of it the surface level story that is present in it. I think it's a beautiful book. The way she frames panels is amazing. There's a few times where Emma's like kind of framed behind like this dark wallpaper and it's so like unsettling. And we talked about the kind of the impression of the, either the size of the panels or the screaming within it. And obviously,
I'm gonna buzz you there. She finally has one, she takes a break and takes a bath and, we see the panel. It's like she's bathing in milk because like it's just the white of the page. All these pages are very, like you were saying, claustrophobic is such a good word. All these pages are a little bit like kind of chopped up in the panels, and the panels are very cramped. And usually they're cramped but with the screaming of the child. But you finally have this one moment where she's away from the kid for like what it feels like the first time. She's floating in this, her bathtub. It looks, she's like submerged. It's the first time you don't hear, like not the first time, but you don't hear the child screaming. And in addition to that, like the child screaming is these black letters that just are in very intrusive. And then you're in this opposite. It's nothing but white. She's just floating in this sort of like field of white. And you can you see the silence. It's a great book. That is the most masterful page in it. I think, you can see she's floating. It's beautiful. It's brilliant. Beautiful and brilliant. And it is like top tier storytelling.
Yeah. And,
and right back.
Yeah.
Then it just goes right back.
But so so all that works in kind of the horror elements. Again, when you kind of see the way she perceives the husband and the way he might've been like replaced by this monster, or is he a monster or any of that type of stuff? Like, oh, God.
Oh, can we, so the title, it skips around in time, forward and back, when she's pregnant and then she's giving birth to a child. And then the sort of like key moment where everything changes, she's still pregnant, she hasn't given birth. Her husband goes up into the attic, but he's going to pop the bolt lock and it's going to be the first time they enter the attic. Another thing she does great throughout the whole story is she's storytelling through like repetitive sound, like the tick of a clock or the thump of someone going upstairs. So there's a lot of like sound telling the story or setting you in a particular place. So she hears something happens up in the attic. And when he comes down from the attic, he is, by her count, a different person. And like you're saying, there's like three different ways you can read this. And one possible reading is that like, something happened to him. But this is also, it is also the sort of like, as that scene plays out, that's where she gives birth. Like her water, we see her water break while she's sort of talking to him in the attic. So it is like first of all, the title comes from this scene. This is where the sort of like supernatural elements start to really like bloom. And it is like the most important moment in the story.
Yeah. And like it's done so well. It is, again, it's very unsettling. Mm-hmm. And from that point, you can read it as this story. And even with the twist at the end, what it infers, and even like that, I think it, like, again, on the surface level, I think as a horror story or as just kind of this general story about Emma is great. But I think, again, why a lot of the things that we cover, the interest is like, I think like what we've been talking about is, I think you can read multiple levels and layers into this book. And that's kind of where the added brilliance comes from. And I think to be able to tell a story that works on the surface level as a good story, and then also kind of as this exploration into like, men and women and pregnancy and postpartum depression and, roles in society, gender roles. Like, I think to be able to tackle all that while still telling a coherent and unsettling horror story on the same time is why something like this is great. Even very much kind of like why I think 20 Fists works so well as well, because I think, again, I think a Rumble book has been done, and there's fun ways to do it, but to be able to kind of layer it with these dynamics of characters and the kind of relationships, but also these characters who don't really fit into a Rumble story, I think is why that works. And again, on a surface level, that the fights in that work really well, but at the same time, like, if you want the other things, they're there available for you.
Yeah, great way to tie it back to the first part. I would say one more thing. I think, like, the just to sort of maybe overhang on Hereditary at the end ultimately is a choice, and I think this book remains a little more ambiguous. Like, I think there are, it's like Inception, where you can maybe, you can pick the story you want to, you can pick how you want to read the story, and there are multiple options presented to you, and you also, like, none of choosing one of them does not contradict any of the other ones. And that, like, I wish Hereditary had done that, and I think she does that, pulls it off great. I mean, amazingly. Just, it was a really great book. I mean, both of them were great books. And again, I think that, yeah, the thing about 20 Fists is, like, these characters are not, well, I mean, it's a character book, and then, like, everybody has to have a job, and there seems to be fighting. But, you know, it's just what they do when they clock in. Like, the real story is what's happening around that. And you, like you said, the characters, like, you want to know what these characters are doing. Like, you know, any bar they walked into, I'd be intrigued. You know, they're, like, they're so fascinating looking, and, you know, they sort of have a, like, their own sense of cool.
Yeah. And that's why I think why the books stand out. Like, if you told me that I would be in love with a book that's about a first mom in post-war, America, a secluded story, I'd be like, man, okay, like, maybe. Same with, like, would I be so invested in a Ferris wheel mascot? Probably not. I am.
Ferris Wheeler is the Barb of 20 Fists.
Yeah, and I will say, I'm much like we talked, Celine Loup, like, I believe this came out, so that's why I think the French thing actually worked. I believe it came out in 2017. And I don't know if maybe that's when, in 2019, it got re-released here, or maybe that's how it happened. But I've noted, like, all her comics, at least that she lists online, are in English. But she has, like, some amazing work. So you can go on her website, and I believe it's CelineLoup.com. There's quite a few that are amazing. But,
and it's a loop, like, soup.
Yes. Like, oh, like, fuck, man. That's why that makes sense. I was, like, the whole time I was like, I kept wanting to say, like, Loop or Loop. And I was like, because, like, Loop is L-O-P. And I was like, that doesn't make sense. But, yeah, soup is S-O-P. English is fucking dumb. This is dumb.
Yeah, so the Celine Loop of the Day. The Celine du Jour.
But those are our two greatest comic books of all time.
You know, speaking of where to find her on the internet, Kyle Overkill, where do we want to find you on the internet?
Right here, but you can at Kyle Overkill, I think, on Twitter. We have Pages and Panels. So if you're listening to this on the Pages and Panels feed, we do this every other, pretty much, it seems like now, Thursday, maybe Friday, depending on scheduling. But the opposite week is our Pages and Panels episode, which is an interview with a creator talking about a book. So if this one is up next week, we will be talking to Cauldron of Burgers about new book and his independent stuff. And we have, we actually, because we're on opposite weeks now, we're actually building a catalog, so that's good. backlog, but yeah, so that's that. I think, well, so if you're listening to this, and yeah, it will be up, I think, tomorrow audio wise on the feed, but I think we should say congratulations, Jack.
Oh, thank you. I'm going to have a baby. I hope it's
you're not sad afterwards. Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. The anthology that I'm a part of, Yule, a collection of creepy, weird tales around Christmas, we mentioned it last week, the Kickstarter has been live. It funded. I could not be more excited. It was a nail biter. Like, we're one day away from it closing. A lot of people are out there, like, giving, you know, passing the word around. So, thank you to everyone who helped share the word, or if you checked in on it from this podcast, thank you. I got to see most of the pages. They're phenomenal.
That's Heather Vaughn.
Jeez.
Dude, she's fucking, I would be, oh my God. I was like, it's like when you first said it, I was like, again, I went and backed it instantly, obviously, because to support you, but it looked really good. And I'm really excited for it. And I saw she started, I was like, who's that? And I started posting stuff. I was like, fuck, man, I need like a book from her now.
Oh my God, so good. Yeah, Heather Vaughn, H. Vaughn, V-O-N, which isn't actually how she spells her last name, but that's how she does it for Twitter. Look her up. She's done work with Mondo. She's done work in a lot of places. Her story, it's her and Jason Piperberg was the writer on this. He's also an artist, so it was a neat reversal. Their story was, like, I think some of the first pages that I saw, and I had not actually sent mine in yet, and I got very, like, oh, oh, we're all like really doing that. She is.
I will phenomenal. Say this isn't like, you know, obviously I'm well, I will be honest with you always, but and I've again expressed how much I enjoy your art. That it's like that full page that the kid under the covers.
Oh yeah,
you posted.
Yeah.
And I say this with as someone who's enjoyed everything you've done. That might be the best thing you've ever done. That thing was beautiful, man. Like, it's so fucking good.
Thank you.
I'm excited to see. Yeah, everyone in this book looks fantastic.
Everyone in this book is amazing. I had the I was on another project before this, so like I my pages were late, but I had seen all the stuff coming in, and like I lit a fire under. So like, thank you for what you're saying. I really felt like I had to like earn my keep in this place. But thank you for saying that. That page got a lot of, for whatever reason, and this is not I'm perfectly happy this isn't a complaint, but like Gunn has I think maybe not everybody likes superhero comics. I'm okay with it. It's the bet I made, I'm fine. But it doesn't always sort of like, you know, people who read comics aren't, or superhero comics aren't always the most effusive, like followers and things like that. So like sometimes it's a little like sort of screaming into the abyss with a gun. And I think because I was in this anthology, this is my first anthology, with all these other creators who sort of have like larger followings, and like because they were helping to sort of like spread the word, this thing kind of got to more eyes, and like people were a lot more expressive about it. And that was very nice to like be on the receiving. It was a great week. And also like the Kickstarter rallied, and it was great to see it. Like, yeah, thank you for the congratulations. I'm very happy. And thank you very much for like, thank you for backing it and support. Like,
I'm sure it was so important that I bet.
every little bit of
Yeah. And I think even so, if you're probably listening to this on the feed, it's probably wrapped, and I would bet there'd be ways to get it afterwards. I don't know if you know specifically, but either way, I think.
Yeah, there will. You guys follow. We'll talk about it more as it publishes. And I know that we had a retailer level, so some shops will actually have it.
It looks, like I said, I am very excited for this. I'm very excited for you, because again, I feel like, and talk we've had, but like you said with Gunn, I mean I love your style and approach to a superhero comic. Like you said, I think people who are into superhero comics, like getting to that is a thing. So I'm hoping like this, where people who would be interested in your style, who I think will like Gunn and the superhero comic, are like, make that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, totally. No, I think, you know what? Thank you. Thank you. Okay. With Gunn, I try not to talk about it too much, because this isn't like, but like
The Gun Show would be a good name.
No, I think like it's neither fish nor fowl. It's not really a superhero comic, although it looks like one. Like, I think anybody expecting it to be one is going to be very disappointed. I think the art style is something that a lot of people don't. But I think like the thing that I have learned, like, it's not this sort of huge audience, but the audience is like, I take long breaks. They're not breaks. Each issue takes a long time to make. The audience is extremely loyal. Like, most of the people who were there for one came back for like have come back every issue. People who jump on stay loyal. Like, I think people like the thing that's being done. It's like, again, it's not huge, and who wants to be, you know, like, you don't want to like write the song that everyone's listening to on the radio. You want to write the song that like maybe one person loves. So like that, like I would rather be
the Venture Brothers versus like the Family Guy.
If that total makes sense. Exactly. That's the like yeah.
And I think like the quality and the time and the small dedication versus. Obviously, kind of the, and then again, there's nothing wrong with either. I think
No.
I mean, quality wise, I would argue was one.
No, I think both are fine. I think the trick in life as a creative is to figure out who you are. Like, if you want to be the person who's writing the song that everyone's listening to on the radio, like, that's a different path, and you got to go on that. And if you don't, you know, like, which is why I say like none of this stuff. Like, I'm always. What is it? I was trying to remember it. I used to be so good with these, but they're starting to fall out of my brain. Motorized, only death, only kill. What is it?
I think it's mechanized.
Mechanized.
Organism. Mechanical organism designed only for killing. It's something organism.
I
don't know if you can tell. He's got a little kitty, too.
Look at him. Oh. Yeah.
It did not come with a kitty. I added a kitty.
I was like, well, maybe I have to watch that Hulu show after all.
Well, $40 spent.
Hey, so for the next week, greatest comic book of all time, do you know what yours will be? I don't. So
I don't know because I was like, I don't know. I enjoy the format now that we can maybe like again kind of explore either bigger things or smaller things or. Do we want to go back to comics or do we want to I don't know if it was, if we were, I don't think we were live when we were talking about X of Swords.
I am still down for an X of Swords, deep dive. Do you have can you read that in the amount of, like,
I can read that in 2 weeks.
Having read it, I can also confirm you can.
Although it's Hickman, I don't know.
No, it's Hickman and it's others too, right? Like, some people think the individual books.
Yeah, I think there's is what it's X-Men, Excalibur, Marauders, X-Force, and Wolverine.
Yeah. Although it does create like a thing. I'm not sure that anyone else has done that, or if they have, I don't know. But usually with these things, you have like the core story of like 6 or 8, and then they spin out into the side. But they just sort of flesh out those stories in ways that connect to the characters in the individual books. But this, like, each book is a chapter, so like. X of Swords 1 starts it, and then Excalibur is the next chapter, and then X-Men is the next chapter.
Yeah, like, it's very much like the X-Men seems to be the only one that does that, where they're like the Second Coming and the Messiah War.
Right.
They're all about, which I like, and it's interesting to see they keep the story. Like, it's the main story, but they pass off writers and artist team versus where it's like, you know, this is what's happening with the New Mutants. Like, they'll just take, like, Hickman will, or I don't know about this because I haven't read it yet, but like, I remember like Brubaker, and then they should just like, you know, here's where I left off in the story, pick it up like with your creative team. So I'll be interested to see if that works or
how. This time around, some do better, some not. More do better, not better than, I think the Hickman stories are all the top ones, but some creative teams sort of spin out better. I think it's the Marauders was the one that I like the best, but I don't want to poison the well, or not poison the well. I don't want to lead the witness. You want to do that one in not next week, which will be Cosmic Burgers, but the week after.
Yeah, and then we can do, then we'll go back to our weirdo comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm wondering if we should do It's just me because now I'm a sad. We should do a manga week at some point too.
You know, at the top when you were talking about that, I was like, we should do
our weeb week.
I was gonna say we should do a manga one. That would be great. All right, so first Exoswords, and then possibly after that a manga week. But in any case, let us know if you have suggestions. Like as Kyle said, the greatest comic book of all time. Essentially, like he takes a book, I take a book, we talk about it. Sometimes it's a current book, sometimes it's an older book. We had a lot of fun doing Secret Invasion, so sometimes doing these sort of like longer runs is something we might do more of. And like he's saying, manga week. If Invincible was good, we were talking about maybe doing a full run on that. Obviously, that wasn't the show to do, but maybe there'll be another one in the future. Maybe Loki.
Well, and those ones are nice because also, like, the amount of stress I felt all day being like, I hope I don't say something dumb about the man who came down the ice stairs. Like, I was reading articles on, like, Postmodern. I was like, all right, make sure I don't, like, use any language I don't like. I shouldn't, like, oh, I like speaking this stuff. So, yeah, to talk, I can say whatever fuck I want about Varenghi. No one gives a shit about
Varenghi, like, do you mean Sharon Carter? Ooh, I said it.
We'll see. But yeah, it's nice to sometimes do the comic stuff.
No, I think it's the best.
Comics are fun. Yeah, it should be fun. In addition to like that's what I love about the medium is it's fun. At the same time, it's a medium that can also tackle extremely like delicate and smart and social issues that we should discuss. But next time we'll talk about Cyclops with a sword, I think. Does he have a sword? Is that the sword? I don't even know what this is about.
No, when they said to the swords, I was like, well, they mean like figuratively, like all the champions are called swords, but then they're like, no, each one has a sword.
I was like, the second you told me that, I was like, okay, I'm going to world. What do you think about this? I haven't read any X-Men since the House of X.
Hox-pox.
Because I've been waiting for it to be collected, which again, this is gonna be weird because it's skipping a bunch of shit, but I'm sure.
I think some of the internal stuff that I think you probably already hit to, like I didn't even fully follow Hox-pox, just, you know, ambiently through the air. I was following a theory that Professor X, like, he was drawn very femininely. So I was like, it's not Heather Nova.
Cassandra Nova?
Yeah, I was like, is this Cassandra Nova? Are we going to do another Charles X heel turn? So I was sort of following and waiting for that, but I get that. Who knows what they're going to do? But you can pick up right where there. Only Modok knows, and he's not telling.
Modok. Oh. I got to get rid of this thing. Play this all the time. Yes, so you'll be able to join us. If you have suggestions, you can hit us up. That's something we'll talk about at some point. I think I had paused the Patreon because I want to figure out what we do, and I think maybe that'd be something if I restart it. Maybe one episode is a Patreon vote, and we will talk about whatever it is, even if it is Liefeld's G.I. Joe book. But.
Oh, you know what? Sorry, we have a retraction. You know, like occasionally, like all responsible journalists, we get things wrong. And when we do, we just want to make a retraction. In a previous episode, I said, hey, no sense in making fun of Liefeld. It's low hanging fruit. It's shooting fish in a barrel. Everybody picks on him. Step up your dunking game. But I was wrong. All dunking on Liefeld approved, accepted, and please dunk harder. That guy, he's
welcome to the club.
He makes it easy, but that does not mean that you should refrain.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Cam. Gone too soon. But yes. Join us next week. probably on I should look at a fucking date. What's a date? Let's see. I'm looking at a calendar here. Ooh, the 13th, we will probably be back at 9 o'clock. So come join us on the YouTube, whatever that is. I don't know. Page and Panels YouTube. There is a very a sweet girl that at some point was reviewing manga who also has the Pages and Panels YouTube. Watch her too. She was very, I enjoyed her videos. They were very cute. And I like manga. So. We will be signing out. We need a goodbye thing. Goodbye. I don't know what that is.
Audio.